Hello, this is Wesley J. Smith, Senior Fellow at the Discovery Institute, and you're listening to Brave New Bioethics. Jack Kevorkian will soon be out of jail on parole, and you can bet that media bigwigs will be tripping over each other to get the first big interview of the man known as Dr. Death. Unfortunately, whoever interviews Kevorkian, we can almost be assured that the hard truth about his career as a suicide facilitator and euthanasia advocate will not be exposed. Nor will these interviewers press Kevorkian on the ultimate goal of his nearly 10-year, law-defying campaign of assisted suicide during the 1990s. Kevorkian is ubiquitously described in the media as the retired doctor who helped terminally ill people commit suicide. But that isn't true, and it never was. Kevorkian did not believe that assisted suicide should be narrowly applied to the dying. This fact was easily discernible from what he said, what he wrote, and what he did in his rise to becoming, for a time, the most famous doctor in the world. For example, in 1992, writing in the Journal of Forensic Psychiatry, Kevorkian proposed establishing a series of euthanasia clinics, which he called obitoria. These euthanasia clinics were to be staffed by physician killers who would be permitted legally to terminate people who requested death. Kevorkian foresaw that the first patients would be terminally and chronically ill. However, he looked forward in the article to the clinics eventually being of service to the existentially anguished, people he labeled, quote, patients tortured by other than organic diseases, close quote. He had gone even further a year earlier in his 1991 book, Prescription Medicide, in which he urged the creation of a category of, quote, optional assisted suicide for people who want to die. Those qualifying for mercy killing under this category would include terminally ill people as well as disabled people with, quote, crippling deformities, close quote, and those suffering from, quote, intense anxiety or psychic torture, close quote, or those who seek suicide in pursuit of what Kevorkian called, quote, religious or philosophical tenets or inflexible personal convictions, close quote. Kevorkian showed a special interest in helping to kill disabled people. In an interview on the Charles Grodin Show, he labeled people with serious disabilities who were not in despair to be, quote, certifiably pathological, and urged that assisted suicide be made available to the disabled as a, quote, standard medical service, close quote. This wasn't just talk. Kevorkian put his suicide machines to work terminating the lives of scores of disabled people. Indeed, about 70% of the 130 so people who died in Kevorkian's rusty van or other venues were not terminally ill. Most were disabled and depressed. At least 5 had no discernible illness upon autopsy. And this was true from the very start. In 1991, Kevorkian's second victim, Marjorie Wants, complained bitterly about unresolved pelvic pain. But she was an emotionally disturbed woman who had been in mental hospitals. Her autopsy showed no discernible pathology of any kind. His third assisted suicide, Sherry Miller, who died alongside and shortly after Wants, was disabled with multiple sclerosis. She also despaired because her husband had divorced her and she worried about burdening her parents for her care. Kevorkian has been described as compassionate, but clearly cared little for the people who came to him for death. Here are just a few examples. In 1995, Esther Cohen, age 46, died a la Kevorkian. She had multiple sclerosis and apparently received such poor care before traveling to Michigan for suicide that her sister told the press she was covered with bed sores. Kevorkian either never noticed or did not care. Then there is the horrible 1996 case of Rebecca Badger, age 39, who sought out Kevorkian's help in suicide because she believed she had multiple sclerosis. Her autopsy proved that she did not have the disease and, in fact, that she was not physically ill at all. Further investigations revealed that Badger was a recovering alcoholic who was suffering from depression and was addicted to pain pills. Judith Curran, age 42, may have been a victim of spousal abuse. A woman who reportedly abused prescription drugs, Curran had reported her husband to the police for violently abusing her shortly before he flew her to Kevorkian for death in 1996. She had been diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, but her autopsy detected no illnesses. Kevorkian suggested in Prescription Medicide that assisted suicide should include the option of organ harvesting. In 1998, he decided to act on this desire. Oakland County, Michigan medical examiner L.J. Dragovic reported that the body of Joseph Tushkowski, who had quadriplegia, underwent, quote, a bizarre mutilation, close quote, after his apparent homicide. According to the autopsy findings, after Tushkowski died by lethal injection, the mutilator crudely ripped out the dead man's kidneys. In a macabre scene, the medical examiner called out of a, quote, slaughterhouse, close quote, the perpetrator simply lifted up Tushkowski's sweater, did his dirty work, and tied off the blood vessels with twine. That mutilator was Jack Kevorkian. He proudly admitted that he removed Tushkowski's organs at a news conference where he offered the organs for transplant, first come, first served. But even this outrage almost pales in comparison to Kevorkian's ultimate goal, human vivisection. Kevorkian was obsessed with death, and as described in Prescription Medicide, but rarely reported in the media, his ultimate aim was to gain license to conduct experiments on living people he was euthanizing to, quote, penetrate the mystery of death, close quote. Thus Kevorkian wrote, quote, knowledge about the essence of human death will of necessity require insight into the nature of the unique awareness or consciousness that characterizes cognitive human life. That is possible only through obiatric research on living human bodies and most likely concentrating on the central nervous system, close quote. Toward this end, he had spent years attempting to convince condemned prisoners and the authorities to permit him to cut open those being executed. Only after that effort failed did he turn his focus to the sick, disabled, and depressed, in the hope that through assisting their deaths, he would eventually be permitted to conduct his macabre and useless research. This is the hard truth. Jack Kevorkian is a quack, a ghoul, and a fiend. Such statements are not ad hominem attacks, but accurate descriptions. He is a quack because, though trained as a pathologist, he had no training or expertise in diagnosing or treating depression, nor had he treated a living patient after his residency and military service in the 1950s. Also, the experiments he wanted to pursue were scientifically useless. He is a ghoul because he is utterly obsessed with death. He is a fiend because of what he did to Joseph Tushkowski and because he was motivated in all he did by his dreams of human vivisection. Ultimately, you can bet that this ugly truth will be lost in the media reports about Kevorkian after his release from prison. Instead, we will hear and read of Jack the martyred saint, punished simply because he wanted to alleviate suffering in the terminally ill. But that wasn't Kevorkian's purpose, and he never tried to hide it. I'm Wesley J. Smith, and that's my opinion. Thanks for listening.